Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 27th of April, recording at 9:19 p.m. That's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first we'll have a quick review of the week. For global stock markets, having rallied quite persistently since the second week in March, most, not all, but most stock markets went into somewhat more rangy patterns over the last week in a consolidation. Most of these are taking place near or above the February highs. More on that later, of course. And government bonds, well, yields have crept up a bit here, particularly in Europe, but they're not running away. Really, the exception there is in Japan, where yields actually came down a wee bit. And in the currency markets, it's been a soft dollar. It got a little bit of respite yesterday, but it's back on the rails here today, almost wiping out, more than wiping out yesterday's rally in some instances. And the yen remains quite weak as well, possibly perhaps even a little bit weaker than the US dollar. And precious metals had a blowout. They've done this plenty of times in the past here, well, really, since over the last year nearly. But they had a reasonably good day in here today, weakening initially, closing near the highs of the days. Of the day. More on that in a moment. Industrial metals followed the precious down, but have also all bounced, all showing some good gains today, except I think for zinc, which had been one of the steadier ones anyway. And soft commodities, a tad firmer in here today, but they've been under some pressure recently. Main exception is wheat, which had been roaring higher, and of course corn had steadied as well. Have I missed anything? Of course I have. The petroleum complex, good gains in here today, up 137. Evidently there was a big plot discovered, lots of people arrested in Saudi Arabia, groups of Al-Qaeda types who were planning to fly planes into the Saudi oil installations. And the markets don't need that, of course. But that did seem to add some firmness here to the crude price overall. But I don't think that's responsible for what we're seeing in gasoline, which is just romping on the upside, approaching 240 now. So there's a lot going on here. Okay, so where are we? What can we say about these global stock markets on a short-term basis, on an intermediate-term basis, and on a long-term basis? Well, on a short-term basis, they're overextended, as I've been mentioning in the daily broadcasts, and due for some consolidation. We had seen a number of indices pull up and away again from the 200-day moving averages, although not disastrously so. But we're a little bit overbought, and we've started to consolidate those gains. There's a fair amount of nervousness around. That's not a bad thing. Now, now I'm getting ahead of myself. I'll come back to the point I was about to make. So it's not a bad thing. Here's overbought, beginning to consolidate. I maintain that the risk in this environment currently is of a somewhat sharper reaction, probably not as sharp as what we saw at the end of February and at the very beginning of March. And to get a reaction that sharp, we would have to have another dramatic catalyst in a major market, and that would have to be Wall Street or China. But people saw what China did last time, and then we had the little wobble, I think it was last week, came down 4% instead of the 9%, and markets are getting a little bit used to this. So I think, again, the short-term risk, as I see it, is that we get downward reactions less dramatic than what we saw in February and early March, more sideways ranging, bringing markets back closer to their 200-day moving averages best seen on the weekly charts. There's nothing wrong with that overall. Now, we are moving into a more hostile, or should I say less friendly, environment for equities. That's the May to October run, and so that will weigh on a few people's minds. But the point I was going to make is that I am seeing a lot of very bearish comment, and it's coming from some of the most erudite, intelligent, and experienced people. For instance, someone had sent me a photocopy of part of John Hussman's latest note, April 23rd, Foxes Minding the Henhouse. I would be delighted to have the report if someone wouldn't mind emailing that through so that I can share it with a Fuller Money Collective. But he, and what I've read so far, he is certainly questioning the quality of U.S. corporate earnings. Now, I won't try to explain all that because it'd be an hour-long broadcast, but it's convincing, and I don't question it. Then Jeremy Grantham, coming back from a sort of a global tour, and he's talking about bubbles everywhere. I'll be posting that report when I can get around to it this evening. So there are some, as I say, some very, very experienced people. Mark Faber has been bearish for a number of months now. And people like Anthony Bolton in the UK, well, I haven't heard from him recently, but he was certainly bearish last autumn and earlier in the year. Now, why are they bearish? These people are not fools. They are among the smartest people in the business. And the reason is that they see bubble tendencies, and they don't see anywhere near as many bargains around as previously. They are concerned about the quantity of money that's pouring into the private equity field, and they think that people just regard that as something that will prevent any serious corrections in stock markets from occurring. And they see, ultimately, private equity becoming a sucker's trap, and where the smart people at the beginning, like most of these things, make most of the money, and then you get a few other people who break even, and then you get the last group which loses money on it. Well, sure enough, you could say the same thing about anything. You could say the same thing about hedge funds. The top 5, maybe 10% will know exactly what they're doing and be extremely skillful, and then they gradually move towards mediocrity and worse. But thus it always was in various fields. So I'll just summarize this by saying that a lot of very experienced, intelligent people are saying that markets are not as attractive as they were, not by a long shot. Now, that's hardly surprising, given a four-year uptrend and counting. So we are in a somewhat more risky environment, to say the least. Now, does that mean it's over? No. Not one of these people who is talking about these conditions is saying that markets are about to unravel. They're putting on some hedges, and that's costing them money overall. My own take on this is that the identification of bubbles, and it's the smarter people who identify them earlier on, as I've just been saying, but they identify them in their earlier stages, and bubbles go on building and building sometimes, and the really important ones build for years. So I think we're getting the initial warnings, or we know we're getting the initial warnings, but I don't think that we have this across-the-boards euphoria that I would associate with real danger. We're not getting new paradigm talk, and we're not going to. The 2000 memory is fresh enough in everybody's mind, so nobody will talk about new paradigms. We are not going to get, I don't think, sort of euphoric extrapolation of advances. So I hope and I suspect that the nervousness will be enough to cause more reactions, more sideways ranging, which corrects overbought conditions somewhat, and that this background of strong global GDP growth will be enough to ensure that 2007, this third year of the US presidential election cycle, which is historically the most bullish, does not become one of the important footnote exceptions. Just taking a sip of water. That's what I hope. Now, what could go wrong? Oil prices spike, and more seriously, or even simultaneously, long-dated government bond yields spike. There is, of course, a risk with the U.S. economy, which is going to persist probably for most of this year. Now, I've been of the view that the U.S. would probably avoid a recession while saying that obviously the risks are on the downside, and it hasn't, the U.S. economy hasn't bottomed yet. But the best thing that it had going for it was a strong global economy generally, and a soft dollar, and a Fed that I think is pretty well aware of the risks and is unlikely to overreact in terms of interest rates. We will see. Now, the long-dated government bond yields, if we're fortunate, reasonably fortunate, and I think we might well be, they won't rise so rapidly while the U.S. economy is so soft, to cause real problems for global stock markets. Now, the other factor is, might the dollar, U.S. dollar, go into free fall? Well, people have been predicting that for years. I've been saying it almost certainly would happen. You'll get more ranging. Too many other central banks want to prop up the dollar or prevent it from falling too rapidly. And I've also been emphasizing that a controlled, gradual devaluation of the U.S. dollar is good for the global economy overall. The U.S. certainly needs it, and it won't go all that far towards correcting all the imbalances, but it's a step in the right direction. So, I see an environment where we ought to be able to get through this year and into next without any really serious damage. If that's too optimistic, it's because something spikes, either long-dated government bond yields or the crude oil price or both, or there's an exogenous event which just terrifies people. For instance, if the 170 people reported, according to Bloomberg, that were trying to sabotage the Saudi oil installations, if they'd managed to pull that off somehow, it would have put all markets into a tailspin. That would have been a horrendous, exogenous event. So stuff like that can happen. Stuff happens, as they say, to coin a phrase. But I'm not in the business of forecasting that, and I'm not going to invest on the basis that there are shadows out there, and I'm content to hold my portfolio of investments at this stage while watching carefully. I do not delude myself that this is some happy-go-lucky environment where the risks are minimal and we all ought to make lots of lolly. The risks are certainly increasing. For that very reason, I'm not willing to put new money into my investment portfolio. I have accumulated cash over the last couple of years here or more, and I generally do keep a fairly substantial cash holding for me. That's partly as a backup to all the futures trading that I do, and the income on the cash helps to offset some, not all, of the contango costs that are involved in the futures contracts. But I only mention that in the sense that I don't want to digress on that too much, but I don't want to put new money into my investment account, or certainly not much. Now, if I'm too optimistic about stock markets this year and we get one heck of a shakeout, I don't think that's going to happen, but this is a hypothetical, then I would potentially increase my investment portfolio by 50 to 100% if we saw a really dramatic sell-off. But again, emphasize, I don't expect that. Equally, on the other side of the coin, I have said over and over again that I'm not going to be doing a serious clear out of my investment portfolio in all probability unless I fear a global bear market. And I've said that I feel that the risk period for that is, well, I don't think we're going to see it before 2009, 2010 at the earliest. But mind you, forecasting this sort of thing is the most difficult challenge in the, if I was going to say in the world, which would be an exaggeration, but in the markets. And you've seen how many people have tilted at that windmill in recent years, talking about various different markets collapsing and so on, and made themselves look silly overall. Well, I'm in the business of making money here as well, and I'm looking at these trends for global stock markets. I still see enough value around to be reasonably relaxed, not least in one of my very favorite sectors, the industrial resources. You've got phenomenal values there, particularly in the mining area. So I don't, not everything is a bubble, is the point I'm trying to make. Are art markets hitting record highs? Yes, that indicates a lot of liquidity and some inflation fears. Are inflationary pressures picking upwards? You bet they are. It'll happen gradually and erratically over a long period of time. And what will happen out there at some stage, hopefully not before 2009, 2010 at the earliest, is that we will have a stagflationary environment. There will be a far greater risk of a global recession, and it will be a more hostile period for markets. Now, we don't need to lose any sleep over that here today, I don't think, because that's not the situation here today. We're on a journey in that direction, though, and that's inevitable. That always happens. You get periods where markets do extremely well and they're extremely attractive and low risk, and then they become fair value, and then they become overvalued, and things go wrong, and then you get a big shakeout, and then you start the cycle all over again. Well, we've been through this before, my veteran subscribers and I, and we'll go through it a few more times as well, and hopefully we'll be just as adept at spotting those turns, more adept. Say we always want to do better. That's the objective, at any rate. Okay, enough on equities. Long-dated government bonds don't like the sector. The only thing that would make them a buy would be a severe slowdown in the global economy. I do not expect that. That would require real shocks, spiking oil price, and I think a real slowdown in the global economy. It's possible, but I wouldn't touch those bonds unless we saw an environment such as that, major correction in global stock markets. But I don't think that bonds are going to be a great buy until we're in some point in a global bear market for equities with a global economy deteriorating, weakening, in other words. And I think that will only be a medium-term run in the long-dated government bonds. They are in a secular bear market. The charts show you that. I've been saying it since June, July 2003 when yields bottomed. Now, the main value for us, I think, of the long-dated government bonds is as the canary in the coal field. And keep an eye on those yields because they will impact absolutely everything else, not least central bank actions. And turning to the currencies, as I said in my quick review, there are two weak currencies in here, the US dollar and the yen. It is hard to argue that they should be anything other than weak, and the only factors that prevent them from weakening dramatically is that market systems, people take profits from time to time overall. Central banks in other countries other than Japan and the US, that is, they don't want to see their currencies going over the moon. So they control them, they interfere, and so on. But I see absolutely no reason why the yen shouldn't weaken further. I've said this really for a long time, and yet, we get people forecasting dramatic yen rallies, particularly against the US dollar, all the time. Why should that happen when the interest rates are so negative? Why should that happen when Japan's economy is not yet a powerhouse? Why should that happen when a whole generation of Japanese monetary officials have been scarred by the endaka, the word Japanese word for a strong yen, experience of the 1990s and early 2000s? They are determined to keep that yen soft. They are in no hurry to raise short-term interest rates. They will keep the supply of yen abundant to keep the currency weak. And against that background, why shouldn't those Japanese investors, from institutions to households, why shouldn't they pump money into higher yielding currencies and get the favorable return? And of course, it becomes a self-reinforcing system. As for the US dollar, well, the country really does need, with that weak economy, with all those debts and deficits, it really does need a soft currency. So that's the big story. And we can't say that about any other major economy, but we can say that about the world's two largest economies. The currencies that can most withstand further strength are the Asian currencies, because they've been undervalued arguably for quite some time, but it will be a slow appreciation. Over 10 years, it'll be very, very significant. But on a week-to-week or month-to-month basis, it'll be extremely gradual. I'm taking another sip of water. Now, precious metals. There's a big headwind in the form of rising interest rates still in a number of countries. This is not true of the US dollar, so that will keep the dollar price of gold and other precious metals generally firm overall. But we are not seeing gold appreciate against some of the hard currencies, against any of the hard currencies at this time. I think that will happen again. The chart patterns suggest to me that it will happen again. I think the fundamental background suggests that it will happen again, but it is not happening right now. That doesn't mean that gold's a bad investment. I think it's an extremely good investment and important hedge over the long term against inflation, the inflation pressures that we actually see. But it means that gold will range more than it trends, and it will remain fairly choppy within this long-term secular bull market overall. Bull points, we do see the wealth creation leading to greater investment in gold, whether that's in the form of jewelry in India or just people putting money into bullion funds elsewhere. And I think that trend will continue. And it also, gold is also part of, and other precious metals are part of, the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. And that will help to support prices. More promising markets in the, thinking out loud when I do these audios, I was going to say in the short to medium term, not sure about that, but the most fundamentally underpinned markets, I should say, are the industrial metals. And that's everything from aluminium to uranium. And again, major supply and elasticity meets rising demand themes at place. The production increases are occurring on a very slow, erratic basis overall, and that's not going to change anytime soon. It will change gradually. But even more important than that, the infrastructure spending is absolutely enormous, and it involves almost all of the developing economies, certainly within Asia, certainly within Central and South America, and within most of the Middle East, and also within Eastern Europe, less in Africa, but there is certainly some infrastructure spending going on there. Well, this is all, of course, requiring a huge amount of industrial resources, particularly metals, and it will keep these prices very firm for a long time. And then, because we have a global economy synchronized in a period of GDP expansion, that is also creating a lot of wealth, particularly in this cycle in the countries with the largest populations. So China and India continue to lead the GDP growth stakes, and as they create middle classes of hundreds of millions of people, that all means more consumption of these industrial resources. Same thing applies to crude oil, although less dramatically. There's more crude oil about relative to the demand than there is nickel right now, or copper right now. So again, the industrial metals from aluminium to uranium are the best of the supply and elasticity stories. Uranium is the best of the energy stories overall, but the energy story for petroleum, I think, is really quite bullish. Demand continues to rise remorselessly, and it's tougher to increase the supply accordingly. Now, I won't go into all the biofuels and so on, but that they will go on developing those, and it will be interesting. It's more interesting, really, in terms of expectations regarding crops. And about as far as soft commodities are concerned, I'll just repeat the theme that I've been mentioning on an almost daily basis, that the demand side is known. That's not the key variable. It's already priced into the market. The key variable, the unknown for agricultural commodities, is supply, because we have this wild card in terms of weather. Now, more often than not, weather is good enough to produce good yields, and that has improved over the years, the ability to produce good yields, because there have been more disease and drought-resistant strains, seeds, in other words. And also, farming skills have improved from generation to generation. But the big difference this time is not weather vagaries, although that is going to be different at some stage, but the global stockpiles are much reduced overall. But still, the most important thing of all will be the supply side, for which weather is likely to be the biggest influence, certainly as far as the crops are concerned. And if we do get any severe crop disruptions, prices are going to spike, excuse me, mightily. Without that, we'll probably get more ranging and drifting overall, but with demand ensuring that instead of prices moving historically lower in both real and nominal terms, that they're edging slightly higher in real and nominal terms. But again, it's the weather that can make the really dramatic difference. I would expect some major weather scares during this season. We usually get some, and that will create a certain amount of turbulence. Well, that's pretty much it, folks, for another week. So, for my voice goes, I will wish you a splendid weekend. I intend to have one myself. All the best. Speak to you next week. Bye-bye.